And with a look at our area trails on the phone with us, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Wow, what a beautiful morning you got going here. It's especially following up the incredible thunderstorms we had last night. That was really pretty fun. So trails quickly would be, once again, things under mid-mountain are still probably pretty good. If they face pretty much to the extreme north, they're still either wet or snowy. And you can get up Armstrong to like Ham, but you still got to pick your places carefully. If you're planning on riding this morning, that might be pulling the trigger a little quick. Things should be dried out by this afternoon if you're looking at Round Valley and stuff like that. A couple of quick announcements. We do have an event tomorrow out in Round Valley. We have the Round Valley Rambler. So that's a half marathon and a 7K. You can still register for that event tonight at Jan's at 3 o'clock, 7 o'clock, as well as register for the Triple Trail Challenge. And tomorrow morning we will, if you just suddenly get up and just have a hankering to do a race, you can register day of at Trailside, North Trailside Trailhead at 6:30 to 7:30 for registration. Race starts at 8 o'clock. And we should be off the trails out there by probably at the latest 12 o'clock. So good, should be good fun. If you see people out there running, please cheer them on and let them get by. Anyhow, let's see. That's what we got going on. Hopefully everyone has a great weekend. It looks like the weather's really queued up to be a good one.
Okay, Charlie, thanks. KPC 813, good morning. Well, joining me now on the phone with an update about some of the development projects happening here in Summit County, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
So let's start first with the expansion there at Utah Olympic Park. For those of, like me, who looked out and saw a new hotel, it actually is some athlete and athlete housing, so sort of like a hotel, I suppose, there on the hillsides of the Olympic Park. Is that finished?
Well, that is a really incredible project out there. Is it finished? No, but it is ahead of schedule. We originally thought this was going to be completed in the early fall, but it appears that it will be done possibly as soon as midsummer. What makes that project kind of unique is what it's meant to serve and what it's meant to help keep going. It's a project that's about, I think it's around about 54,000 square feet. There's somewhere over, I think, 72 units part of that. What it's intended to do is to provide short-term, interim-term housing for athletes training up at the facility and in the area. It's also meant to provide some opportunities for workforce housing for the employees up at the park. And the other aspect of it is it's a way to help generate some, I believe, revenue and income for the facilities up there to kind of keep those things going into the future. You know, they're Olympic facilities, you know, we've had, you know, 100 years or so of a Winter Olympics, and you know, the downside is what happens to all those facilities and sites when the flame gets doused and the games are over with. And we're pretty proud to live in a community where there is a real true legacy moving forward, not only in the facilities themselves and what they may represent in terms of being able to host a games in the future, but, you know, I think a lot of us can honestly say the legacy is with the children who are growing up or have grown up in Park City, and to be able to have those types of facilities. This is an opportunity to help fund those types of activities moving forward in the future. It's a way to help house. It's in a unique way providing housing opportunities that probably otherwise wouldn't be available or would be hard to get into the opportunity in the hands of some of the athletes. So we're pretty excited about that. Part of what's going on out there, it's not just that building, but the Planning Commission recently approved a conditional use permit, I think, and just last month. And what that entails is expanding some of the ski terrain and training terrain up on the hill, basically between the bobsled run and the jumps. And part of that will include the installation of a new lift. I think it's about 7 towers for that. A lot of the youth here in the community who used to train in other areas, the alpine athletes at Park City Mountain Resort or Deer Valley, or the Nordic athletes that were training on the golf course track or in Round Valley, now are going to be having opportunities to have a consolidated, more holistic facility up on mountain there. Some of that terrain will be lit. We're happy to report that lighting will be consistent with our newly adopted lighting ordinance that the Planning Commission on the west side here in Council has adopted. We've put some measures into that to help make sure that those lights are on only when we need them and not on all night, so you know any potential light trespass or problem will be addressed. We're all pretty excited about that project up there, and hats off to Colin Hilton and the Utah Legacy Foundation for working as closely with us as they have on that project.
Okay. Well, what can you tell us about the proposed wind farm in Echo Canyon?
Okay. Hoping to get the word out to the community, the broader Park City Summit County community on this. What this project is about is the development of a 100-megawatt wind generation wind farm. And we're talking the large windmills. Where this is being proposed is out on I-80 in Echo Canyon on your way out to Evanston. It's almost to the state line. It's just inside the Utah side of the line. What's being proposed are the construction of the big wind generating towers. These would be the large ones that, you know, upwards to 500 feet tall. There's 30 to 39 of them being proposed. Why the range? It's going to depend on the actual siting of these towers. That'll probably end up determining the number that will be ultimately installed. This project, if built and completed, would plug into the main Rocky Mountain power line that runs through the area. Just to give an example of what this might be able to do for the region, this facility is capable of powering 22,000 homes annually. This is a big deal. Now, there's a lot of positive associated with this, but we need to be mindful that it's carefully thought through and some of the potential impacts addressed. There's a number of studies currently underway, noise studies, wildlife studies, some viewshed studies. The applicant in this particular case is a group called Echo Divide Wind LLC. We just heard earlier this week that they pulled together a schedule for some public outreach, and the first one is going to be here in Summit County in Colville on June 27th. They're going to have an open house from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's going to be in the brand-new Ledges building. If listeners out there haven't had a chance to come out to Colville and see that facility, it's at the fairgrounds. It's a really wonderful meeting place. It's a good place to host something like this. So there's going to be the public open house on the 27th. I understand there's going to be others in the area. There's going to be outreach to the folks that live in the Evanston area. We're tentatively looking at our first unveiling of this publicly beyond just the open house at a work session on July 18th, and we're shooting for the public hearing portion of it to occur in August. So more to come on that. Potentially a very significant a project from the terms of trying to meet sort of our regional sustainability and energy goals. And again, we want to be able to get some feedback from the community and some of the neighborhoods near the border and the residents in Evanston to make sure we understand what the potential impacts of this and, you know, whether or not they can be successfully addressed. So this is a big project, and we're anxious to bring it forward.
Okay. Again, tell me the date of the open house.
Open house is going to be June 27th. It's going to be here in Colville at the Ledges building, and it's going to be from 6 to 8, and anticipate a pretty robust outreach on that. A lot of times, if you're living in Park City or in the Snyderville Basin, what goes on out Echo Canyon maybe is, you know, maybe not front on everybody's mind unless they're running for liquor or fireworks or something. But, you know, this is going to be a big one, and I joke on that. But this is going to be a big one. It has the potential of providing real legitimate solutions and real legitimate clean energy for the region. And you don't have to be paying high attention to realize that that's a big community value in this region. And here's a group stepping up to help potentially address this in a big way. So we're hoping to get a big turnout on this.
Okay. And then what's the latest with regard to the Hoytsville Village Overlay? Again, this is from a couple dozen property owners looking to...
Yeah. We're going to be starting with an initial meeting for the overlay next week. The last sort of piece to have to fall into place occurred last night. We're going to have three representatives from the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission sit on this study group. Quickly, what this overlay is an application that was made by 28 property owners in the Hoytsville area. This overlay, I want to be clear, it doesn't represent all of Hoytsville. It's roughly about 1,100 acres. Not every property owner in Hoytsville is involved in this, but a large number are, again, 28. The community that's being, you know, proposed is under the umbrella of the name of Cedar Crest. What this process is about, what we've created through the code about a year ago with this village overlay process, to my mind, hasn't been done before. What it's about is a bottoms-up, property owner-initiated process by which we're going to seek to achieve a land use plan and take a land use plan and marry it with an infrastructure strategy. You know, if you really want to get growth and development in the right locations and the right amount and the right mix, you got to follow where the pipes go. And it's more than just an aspirational vision of, you know, what a community like Hoytsville, that area, could be going into the future. It's kind of a step beyond that, as how are we going to service that? How can we do that effectively, cost effectively? How do we phase that? And then once the plan and the infrastructure piece determine at least a recommendation to move forward with a concept, then we tackle the issue of what the zoning should be to help implement that. Because what we found over the course of the last 40 years is we attempt to create good communities using just zoning. And, you know, the process, you know, we talk about the term planning and zoning. They're two related but very different concepts. One's the idea and the other's the implementation. Usually what we end up doing is trying to, again, design communities using a zoning process that has a pretty limited palette of zones and is oftentimes somewhat agnostic to blind on how we're going to be able to service these things, like with water and sewer and circulate with a road system. This sort of turns that upside down and starts where we think is where we should be starting. It's let's, at the very basic, fundamental level, the community and the people who own the property within the community, let's work with them, bring in our departmental resources, our stakeholder resources, help identify the community that they want to see in the future, figure out how we serve it, and then go in and figure out how we're going to zone it. The other important part of this, Leslie, is this is 28 property owners, but again, it's not all the residents in Hoytsville. Having gone through recently the Kimball Junction neighborhood planning exercise, what's been really impressed on me is the need to communicate and keep people apprised of where we are early. Here's going to be an opportunity for us to be able to make sure we do a very good job beyond just adequate communicating with the rest of the property owners in the area. When the council looked at this in terms of moving forward and establishing the study area, we had a number of property owners show up, and they were concerned. What's going to go on? What's going to be the end result? Are we going to have a voice? The answer to that question is absolutely. This once the plan is ultimately developed, it'll go through its own process in front of the Planning Commission and the County Council through public hearings. We're just hoping to get out in front of that by making sure as we move forward with this land plan that we're communicating that with the other residents effectively. So we're going to get started on that with an initial meeting towards the end of next week. That's my task when I'm done here talking with you, is actually get that meeting set up. And so that's another one. So oftentimes we just spend, you know, like zoning. We're involved in some things here that are real legitimate longer range planning, and we should be doing it. And my crew is excited to get going on it.
Okay. Hey, real quick, Tour of Utah announcing its tour this week. Are you going to be doing anything with them again this year?
I will be. That's like one of my Christmas in August. I take my planner hat off and I put my bike fanatic race staff member hat on. I will be involved like I had been in years past, working with the crew that does the announcing and the TV coverage on that. So a Northern Utah race this year. So here's a great opportunity for you to see, you know, a week's worth of really high-level professional world tour racing, and you don't always have to travel far in order to see it. You don't have to go to California for the Tour of California or Europe for the Tour of France to see it. All these guys are going to be coming into your neighborhood, and people should be expecting when they see people out riding and they have pro kits on. They're not posers out there. These are the real guys. You know, Peter Sagan has been in town. A number of riders from CCC have been in town. Trek Segafredo, Richie Port has been in town. So support these guys. I think it's going to be a tremendous race this year.
Okay. Hey, Pat, thanks for your time. Talk to you next month.
All right. Take care. Bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council met last night to make some final clarifications for the fiscal year 2020 budget, as well as discussing a few other items. In the studio with a recap, Park City Council member Lynn Werpeek. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see, the council receiving some budget information to review the last meeting before the council scheduled to adopt the budget June 20th. Do you have any unanswered questions or sticking points about the budget before you finalize it?
Well, you know, we all will take a deeper dive into some of the questions. What we saw last night was the fee schedule, and there were very few questions about that. We, you know, continued to, you know, held a public hearing. We got, I believe, no public comment, and we'll vote on that June 20th.
Okay. Something that I think surprised some council members was this proposed gate, $50,000 gate there at MARSAC.
Right. And we were a little bit unclear where that was on the priority list, and then it came up last night. And the reason for the gate, and it seems a pretty good one, is that when that closes on Marsac Avenue, and it's right above where Chambers comes back into Marsac. So in the winter, when it's snowing, that will close, and then cars will line up, and it's steep. And then when they try to turn around, they've had tow trucks up there. I was completely unaware of that. And so what they want to do is move the gate down. And we were a little unclear about exactly where it is, but so that there will be an easier turnaround point. So I think that we're going to maybe look at that again a little deeper. So we didn't necessarily approve that.
Okay. Let's see. You had the first round of special service contracts decided after the city made some changes to the process. Can you talk about some of the new RFP process for the special service contract? Because I think you surprised the folks from the Park City Summit County Arts Council about changes.
Right. Well, we've probably surprised ourselves also with it's complex. We're doing it in a new way this year, and I know it's a little confusing for everyone, ourselves included. But what we did in this first phase is we looked at some of the regular services and how each of the applicants fit into the regular services, which would be community art and culture, history and visitor service, sister city administration, trails management, waste and recycling management. And what in particular the Park City Summit County Arts Council had was a project that they were looking at, and there were sort of these various components of it, and we felt like we approved one arm of it, but they felt like it was all tied in. So if you know, they won't be able to do it if they just get funding for one arm of it. And so we were going to relook at that. But really, the social or special service contracts, we're going to come back with the next phase of it once the Community Foundation puts together their strategic plan for social equity. And we'll look at applications again for social equity as well as innovation grants. And that's going to be, my understanding is about the end of August, maybe September somewhere. So there's still time.
Yeah. Okay. So would the Arts Council then have another opportunity to get the other half of what they were hoping to get?
It's my understanding, yes.
Okay. So. Let's see. You also talked a little bit about housing resources and a little bit about some of the staffing that you're doing with that. And Laurent made a comment in terms of getting, I guess, does the city council want to dedicate more resources into the potential of getting to that 300 units? She said they don't necessarily have funding to do that, so you need to start talking about conversations about partnerships. Are we talking about partnerships with property owners or with other
property owners, private developers, also looking, having the resources and the staff time to be able to look at other funding sources, grants, things like that? That I think what's happening is, you know, we set this pretty ambitious goal and we've got a staff of two full-time people working on it. And so they're taxed, you know, they've got a project going on right now. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about is if the Woodside Park phase two, you know, is going on at the same time as the Homestake affordable housing, and I'm unclear on the schedule for that. We know Woodside Park's going to go first. You know, do we need a dedicated or a second dedicated project manager? We now have Dave Gustafson, but he's just, you know, that's what he does with part of his time is managing the Woodside Park. So it's just about having a little more staff time to be able to really fulfill this ambitious goal.
Okay, so we know that we can get to 300 units. It's the next 500 that we're struggling with?
Well, yes, and, you know, we have to take a look at what's going on in the community, what's Vail putting up at PCMR, and what the various projects are, and how can we increase the incentives, and how can we work with those partners to make sure that, you know, everyone in the community is doing their job in creating affordable housing for their or workforce housing.
Okay. You, the city did receive an appeal of the second phase of Woodside Park, and I, council, since it's the city's project won't be hearing the appeal. Is it going to then the Board of Adjustment? I think the appellant had asked that you create a 3-member panel.
Right. And what we voted on was to approve the consent agenda, which just puts that appeal to the Board of Adjustment. And the reason for that is because that's what the Board of Adjustment is set up for.
Okay. Let's see. The Summit County Health Director, Rich Bulla, talked with the council about continued funding support for the mental wellness efforts at the county. The support of the city originally gave $60,000 for a contracted mental health position. Now that position is full-time and benefited. Sounds like the city ran somewhat contrary, you did, particular to what other council members were saying, that if that's the best way for the city to support mental health goals, then you're okay with funding that position. So were you alone in that, or?
Well, it was a work session item, so it was a really great conversation. We were thankful Rich Bolo came, and you know, we just worked through it. I think everyone on council highly values the work that Aaron Newman is doing with the Mental Health Alliance, in addition to Communities That Care. What my question was so it does seem a little awkward now that it's a full-time benefited position of Summit County, and they pay Aaron Newman's paycheck. It seems a little strange and awkward, perhaps, that we would be paying for that. And yet, if it's easier to fund if it's more difficult to fund positions versus programs, because one of our questions was, well, maybe it's better if we take that $60,000 and put towards programs, because that will seem a little less strange. But I guess what I ended up saying is if it's more difficult to get granting for positions, which I asked that question, and it is, it's easier to get grants for specific programs, then maybe it's not so awkward or strange that we're helping fund this position. At the end of the day, we think that behavioral health and mental health is of huge priority in this community, and we want to make sure it gets covered. And, you know, before we talked about, well, what Park City is putting in and the smaller municipalities are benefiting from that and they're not putting in. And my point was, you know, we're sort of all in this together, right? And a lot of those outlying communities, many of their residents come into Park City to work. And so it benefits the entire bigger region if we support. That was the kind of the bottom line there.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems like we're having this conversation now, not with just mental health, but it's with transit, it's mm-hmm. with a number of other issues. The Wasatch Council, because Park City pays property taxes and additional on county taxes as well. That people living within the city limits are paying a higher proportion
right.
of anything that is done kind of jointly like this. So, I mean, are you concerned about that? I mean, Glenn Wright seemed to be a little bit concerned about it, just given that he thinks you should pay for the $60,000 because the county's paying the city for the transit. So,
yeah, you know, I am not that concerned about it. I think that our taxpayers in the city, we know what we're getting, and we know what we're getting in terms of services from the county. And until we hear a great outcry about what we're providing, you know, double dipping or whatever you want to call it, I'm okay with it. I just think that, you know, we will increasingly look at many of these issues as regional issues, and they are growing pains, and we will have to figure it out. But you know, we're all in this together.
The City Council has a mid-year retreat coming up next month where you're scheduled to focus on finances and taxes. Anything in particular that you've got on that list to discuss?
Oh, you know, I think the list is getting longer and longer. And it really, is it already next month? So I think we'll kind of hone that in. I am concerned about many of the issues and making sure that we are operating as a whole community and we're doing what we can, both as the city and the large employers, to, you know, take care of our workforce.
Okay. So it's not too late. You do have time to file and run for re-election on the city council. Are you reconsidering that decision not to?
I'm not. However, I am a little dismayed that I haven't seen more applicants. And of course, we know that on Friday, I think we have until 5 p.m. Many people, you know, wait till that last minute. I'm not reconsidering, though, and I'm sad about that. But, you know, I actually made my decision some time ago, given the two major reasons why I decided not to. And it was my decision, but I felt like it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, you cited your family's ownership of property near the Arts and Culture District as a potential conflict, and also the fact that you'd have to come off the KPCW airwaves as a mm-hmm. host as reasons you changed your mind not to run for re-election. But those were in full force when you decided to run for the appointed, or at least apply for the appointed position.
No. KPCW came up with a new policy since then the last campaign season, if you were on air, you had to come off just during the campaign. But it's a new policy that if you are an elected official, you can't be on the airwaves at all. And that would include DJ positions as well. And so that was new. And so that was, you know, that kind of tipped the scales for me, I have to say, because I was concerned. You know, we had just purchased, right when I was coming on council, that we closed on the Bonanza Park for the Arts and Culture District. And as we know, you know, many projects, they don't go ahead for years and years. You know, we could have owned that for 10 years before we went ahead on it. And it has actually surprised me how quickly we're going ahead on that. And that will, you know, that'll come before us beginning this coming fall or spring. And, you know, so I could have had the foresight. I could have said maybe at some point I'm going to come up against this, but I would not, I could recuse myself, right? And what I've experienced in the last year and a half being on council, we have a small piece of property in Brighton Estates, so I've recused myself from all the Bonanza Flat discussions. And it's fine, but I feel like when I'm sitting in the hallway, I'm not doing my job. And I, you know, it puts the responsibility on my fellow council members. And, you know, and also I can't advocate for myself really as a citizen or as a resident, as a property owner. And so I tend to err way on the side of caution. Mark Harrington, he encouraged me to not make the decision based on me recusing myself from the conversation. But it's just, it's a personal decision that I feel like I wouldn't really be doing my job.
Yeah. Do you feel bad, though? I mean, just given that you kind of took the opportunity away from somebody else to have been appointed?
Not at all, because I feel like I stepped up at a time when there was this gap and someone needed to go in there that was very familiar with the issues. And I think I was that person. And, you know, I was what the council was looking for at the time. And I don't feel bad for that, because this decision, you know, I couldn't have known what I know now. And I feel like I was a good stopgap council member for the time and stepped up for my community.
Okay. Again, so for Park City, people have until 5 o'clock today. They can go check with the city recorder's office if they're interested. Anything else, Lynn?
Well, around the world and in our country, we're celebrating Pride Month, and we're not doing anything specific that I know of in this community, but I just want to celebrate that in my way and just encourage everyone else to celebrate it in the way that they see fit.
Okay.
Happy Pride Month.
Park City Council Member Lynn Werpeek, thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Good morning. Well, Park City Library Director Adrian Herrick-Warris and Library Board Member Margie Slessor were recently recognized by the Utah Library Association. Adrian joins me now in the studio to talk about the awards they receive. We're hoping that Margie will join us by phone here in a little bit. Good morning and congratulations.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so what you received is the Distinguished Service Award, which I think your nominators said that throughout your career you've given exceptional service to patrons and the profession, especially through this Library Leadership podcast. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, the Distinguished Service Award is a great honor, and I am truly humbled to have received that. It is an award for librarians in the state with a significant record of contribution throughout their career. And that also includes, you know, the development of the Park City Library. But as a professional, we have the opportunity to get involved in development. And that's very important for our profession, especially as information agencies change, we need to stay cutting edge, we need to stay up to date. And so as a contribution, I developed a podcast called Library Leadership Podcast, where I talk with librarians across the country on a show that can be found on iTunes and librarylearnershippodcast.com. And I have an opportunity to learn myself and bring back great things to our community that are happening around the nation in our libraries. It's very exciting.
So I'm not a librarian. Would I still find it interesting?
You know, leadership is for all professions. And the people I talk to are incredible. They're doing great things out there. They care about what they contribute to their community. So anybody who wants that focus, I think, would benefit from the show. So please join in if you haven't.
Yeah, so you're using that cool, nifty equipment that you have at the library to do this?
Yep, got great equipment. And as a matter of fact, we're beginning to check out podcasting equipment now that people can actually take home and do podcasting from their own environments, which is kind of cool, too. We're expanding all the time.
Yeah, you've got that nice soundproof room, though, that
people can
high quality.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I can go in there anytime.
So what was it like, then, to just kind of dive into a podcast without having any kind of podcasting experience?
Well, it's funny, because as I listen back to the older episodes, I do think, wow, I had a learning curve. But people were very patient with me, very kind, and I am so grateful for that. The guests helped as well, high-caliber folks who had great contributions and insights. So it's been fun, and I've learned a lot.
Okay, so if somebody were to search it, what would we look for?
Sure, librarylearnershippodcast.com, or you can go to iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts and type in Library Leadership Podcast, and that should come up for you.
Okay, well, in terms of what you've kind of learned, what are some of the things that other libraries are doing that you'd love to bring to Park City?
You know, other libraries are so innovative. We're all creating 21st century libraries. We're all dealing with new technology. So I learn a lot about that when I talk to leaders. Also initiatives and how to outreach to communities, how to create programs that are super dynamic, and especially experiences, you know, bringing people through our door. What are the experiences they're having? We just did one, my last podcast, on creating experiences. I know we all look back and remember going to the library as children, growing up. And those are the things that keep people coming back over the years. And how can we make that the best possible?
Yeah. There's always the concern, I think, that is people read fewer physical books. Libraries could become obsolete. Do you have that fear?
Well, we talk about relevancy on the show. And we are finding that people do want to unplug sometimes and just tuck in with a nice book. So that's always still an option. That's not going away. But it's combined with really amazing high-tech options. I am now a dedicated listener to audiobooks, which is kind of newer for me. And if you're traveling, you can download books onto your device. You don't have to carry a stack of 10 books on the airplane anymore, and we have that free for our community. And we have amazing databases that libraries subscribe to that are not web-based, that really are well-vetted and provide reliable information. That's free to the public.
What kind of subscriptions are you talking about?
Well, we've got online novelists, so reading resources. We've got maps. We've got travel guides. And that's all just a digital resource. That's a new way of libraries to provide information.
Yeah. What about challenges that you see for libraries in the future?
Well, we really want to create community now. So libraries are all about bringing people through the door. People are sources of information, which is kind of new and exciting. Our meeting rooms are highly invigorated. And, you know, we could use more study rooms. I mean, people are coming through the door all the time. So we're just growing and growing. And we are getting over 175,000 visits a year now at the Park City Library. So keeping up with demand. That's kind of our biggest challenge.
Yeah. Margie, welcome. You were received the Special Services to Libraries Award and nominated for your ongoing support of the Park City Library through the mural wall fundraiser. Can you tell us how that wall started and how much money you've been able to raise for the library through it?
Sure, Leslie. I don't know the complete backstory. I know that the architect and Adrian may have to jump in, but the architect was very involved in helping design the project, and we were looking for a way for citizens of Park City to be able to contribute to the library for special projects, but at the same time have a way of kind of memorializing, commemorating a support for the library. So there are more than 800 4x4-inch tiles that make up the mural, and the mural is a beautiful photograph from Mark Maziarz, who is a local photographer, of aspen trees. And as tiles are purchased, or you know, from donations to the library, each of the tiles is inscribed with text, and then those color tiles replace the black and white squares on the wall. And we're about somewhere below 25% of completing the wall, but it's turning into the most beautiful, gorgeous, you know, photograph of aspen trees. And we very much appreciate the support that have received. We have birthday messages, in memory of messages. Some businesses in town have participated, people have bought them as gifts for others. But we very much appreciate the support we've received so far. But we have many more tiles to complete before the wall is done.
All right. So what does a tile cost?
It costs $150, and it is a tax deductible contribution.
Okay. And the mural is located as you walk in there to the left?
It's on the left side of the staircase, and the new staircase in the center, across from the children's section.
Okay. So how much money have you raised? 25% of what you've got.
I think it's about $25,000, and we're very excited that some of those funds are going towards the new book sorter. Adrian, you may want to jump in here and talk about that.
That's a project we've been wanting to do since we opened the new library, an automated book sorter that will help us check in materials and deal with that demand we were talking about, Leslie. And that's a project the library board has been encouraging, which we will be looking into and taking to council later in the year.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk quickly about the summer reading program that has just started.
Yes, we are so excited, and I can't wait to invite everybody through the door now that school is out. We hope you will get involved at your local library. So we are doing a summer challenge called Literacy Through Letters, and we want people to stay engaged with reading and learning and mind activities or setting goals for themselves. Maybe you want to learn to use a 3D printer this summer. What we're doing is we're having people come in and write postcards to themselves, setting a goal that they would like to achieve. It can be anything. And you mail that to yourself, and your present self mails that to your future self, actually. And then you get about doing your goals. And we will actually mail that postcard to you back at the end of the summer so you can see how you did, which is a lot of fun. And we're doing a Dear Past Self journal read aloud coming up on August 6th, where you can cry, laugh, gasp, and share with your fellow Parkites actual journals. If you saved your journals, you can read some of your journal entries. So we have some really fun things coming up this summer. We hope everybody will get involved.
Okay, the summer reading program, not too late to sign up. You just...
Oh my gosh, yeah. No. Come okay. on in. We're yeah. ready.
And is it just for kids, or are you doing... Because we used to do an adult one, too.
It's for all ages. We've got amazing author visits coming. We have a beautiful new brochure out. So if you pop in, please grab one of those. All of the events are lined out for the whole summer. And don't forget our summer slide, which is a lot of kids slipping around, water balloons, sliding on the field. That's a big event every summer that we really enjoy as well.
Okay. And then quickly, we have the Plaza Comunitaria program just started. Tell me about this.
Absolutely.
This is in partnership with the Mexican consulate.
It is. And it's a wonderful way for folks, our Latino community and Spanish speakers, to work with Ms. Bianca. She has been trained to help implement a program that helps people get their GEDs. If they don't have that, their high school equivalency, they can actually get with us at the Park City Library now through the Mexican consulate through this program.
Okay. Again, just stop by the library and you guys can help anybody who walks in.
Please do.
Okay. Again, congratulations to Margie and Adrian. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.